Welcome to Unprofessional. It's another episode, and I'm Jamie Newberry, still, and also still, it's Dave Wiskus. Are you here, Dave?
I'm here. Well, I mean, I'm here. I'm not there.
You're present, I guess.
I'm on the call.
Yeah, you're on the call. That's a better way to say it. Well, we have a guest.
Who is it?
It's Jason Snell. Jason, are you there?
I continue to be Jason Snell. Hello.
Awesome.
The triumphant return of Jason Snell.
I was on episode 8 for those people who are the hardcore Unprofessional fans who have the Unprofessional compendium that details every guest and everything they said. Look me up. I'm on page 8.
I love it. That was before my time.
It was early days. That was back when it was
that, early.
That was back when it was like Dave and a hobo.
The very
That's funny. We
days.
Almost called the show that.
Right,
Dave and a hobo.
But the hobo proved to be unreliable, unprofessional, if we might say.
Had to get rid of him.
Yeah.
Hence
well,
the
for the people who are new to the show, Jason, you were the previous the hobo. You were the hobo's boss.
I wasn't saying Lex previous. Lex wasn't the hobo. The hobo predated Lex, and it didn't work out. Oh. And that's why you had to go with the hobo. Yes, I was Lex's boss, and then he quit, so I couldn't fire him anymore. And I am in some ways, I suppose, the genesis for Unprofessional in the sense that you guys wanted to do a tech podcast, and for some reason I decreed that if people were doing tech podcasts who worked for me, they should probably do them for our company, which publishes tech things. I'm not sure whether that was a good policy or not, but it turns out it created Unprofessional sort of by requirement, and so that's not a bad thing.
It created a constraint for us, which is kind of what we needed, because I mean, did we really need to do a tech show?
No,
probably
God, no.
Not.
Does anybody?
Because
yeah.
there
clamoring?
Are a few of those out there.
Just a few.
Ends up there's a couple.
Yep.
Well,
but Jason, for the people, where do you do?
I do a few things. I am the editorial director at IDG, which publishes Macworld, PC World, Tech Hive, Greenbot, a whole bunch of enterprise IT publications that I'm not in charge of. I'm in charge of the consumer editorial group. And so that's my job. Before that, I was the editor-in-chief of Macworld for many, many years. And then in my personal time, spare time...
Copious free time.
I am also the guy behind The Incomparable, which is not just a podcast, which it is about geeky pop culture, but it's now basically a podcast network, and we've got a bunch of sort of spin-off podcasts that we do. so I'm doing that, too.
Your podcast has spinoffs?
It does. Many. Several. And more are coming. It's out of control, actually. I might have a problem.
Oh, this is fantastic.
That is fantastic.
It speaks so well of the podcast community and the podcast. I don't want to say industry. That's the wrong word. But community, the podcast, we don't have a good word. I don't think there's a good word. The current state of podcasting. The current state of podcasting.
Podcastosphere. No, let's...
Right.
Oh, I like that.
No, that's, it's terrible.
The communa podcastosphere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Podcastosphere.
Things are progressing in this way, because it doesn't... We tried to follow the model. I say we tried to follow the model of the TV and radio, where it became more of a network model. And that kind of hasn't played out the way we thought it was going to.
Yeah, podcasting, there's so many things about it. I mean, like, the first funny thing about podcasting is that there was that moment where everybody thought it was going to be big, and it kind of didn't take. And
right.
And then there was this fallow period, and then it started to pick up momentum like a few years later. It was just a little too early. And, you know, it's interesting because some companies, I feel like, I mean, Apple's a good example, like, we're all in at the beginning. They're like, yes, podcasting, this is a great idea. And when it didn't go anywhere right away, they're like, okay, it's not going to happen. We're walking away. And now, you know, it's starting to happen. And a lot of those companies are sort of not paying attention because they already wrote it off. But
yeah.
I think we learned a lot, right? We learned that it wasn't quite what we thought it was going to be. And the tools are different, and it's hard. They're difficult. It's hard for people. My mother-in-law asked about podcasts last weekend. And I thought, well, that's interesting. But she was... You know, she wanted to listen to an NPR podcast. She was struggling with it. Mm. And this goes back to that, you know, the idea of the network, that network has some effects, but it's not quite the same as programming a TV network. I mean, it might
right,
be like
right.
You may also like, basically, but it's not, you know, it's not what we thought it was going to be. It's different, and we're still figuring it out. I think it's fair to say that the whole podcastosphere is still trying to figure out what it wants to be when it grows up.
If you can say it at all, that's, there's bonus points in there for you.
Some of it is the language, podcastosphere. No, just the word podcast itself is a stupid word. It sounds dumb. It sounds dippy. It's hard to take that seriously. If I tell people I have a show,
right,
that sounds interesting. If I tell people I have a podcast, that sounds like I hang out in my mom's basement and record Dungeons and Dragons with my friends.
I do that. Well, not mom's basement.
I was going to say that's
my garage.
That's
I do that. But yes, you know, internet. We could have called it like internet radio. Internet on demand radio, internet radio, something like that, and used radio, which people understand. My friend Tim Goodman, who writes for The Hollywood Reporter, likes to call podcasting radio without the listeners, which is not bad. and, you know, it is right. Podcast is a weird word, and I like it, or at least I like the, you know, I like the medium. I love the medium, but I, you know, it is one of those many things that goes into having podcasting be like weird and hard to understand. And it's so great that it's a crying shame that the tools aren't better, that it isn't easier to discover them. It isn't easier for regular people to listen. And part of that may be that the name is an impediment. It's totally true.
Well, it sure as shit ain't easy to make a podcast.
Well, it's easier than making a broadcast radio show, maybe, but it's not.
But
easy.
I mean, there's a delta between blogging and podcasting where you've got tools on the blogging side. You've got Tumblr at the very least, bare minimum. You can walk into Tumblr and have a blog going in 10 minutes.
Podcasting requires a little more effort. I mean, yeah.
Well, even just posting them is more trouble than a blog, right? There is no blogger for podcasts right now. I mean, Libsyn is sort of the closest thing, so you can kind of do it. And then there's making the podcast and having it sound decent. And everybody, it's a little bit like doing video on the internet. It's you know, it can be crappy and some people will listen, but there is sort of a bar that's been set in terms of sound quality that we all just sort of come to expect from radio and things like that. And if you don't clear that bar, you know, I think you're going to severely limit your audience too. Plus you got a schedule. If it's not just you sharing your innermost thoughts to yourself and then broadcasting, beaming those out over the interwaves, you know, if you got a schedule and you got to record and you got to have a microphone and all of this stuff, and it is, and then you got to edit it presumably, and all of that throws in. So it's not, it's a lower bar. I mean, everybody seems to have a podcast. It's a lower bar than it used to be, but that's mostly because you don't have to have your own radio station. That's pretty much it.
Also look at the quality of podcast right now. I think that everybody has a podcast. They're not all good.
It's true.
Oh, I agree.
A lot of these are thrown together. A lot of them are not produced shows. They have like some kind of loose format, but they don't like revolve around a premise. And a lot of it is people, it seems like, who cast themselves as a personality or cast themselves as a pundit.
Yeah, the quality bell curve is definitely there, just like it is, I think, for almost any medium, that especially one that doesn't have a gatekeeper. Although even, you know, even commercial radio has terrible programming that they put on at 2 a.m. or on some station that doesn't have a budget. But you're right. And sometimes people who are really great content creators, there's a podcast by some TV critics that I like that I was really excited when they announced it. And then I listened to one episode and I had to stop because it was unlistenable because it was just so terribly produced. Or you'll have those where it'll sound good, but there's no format and it's infuriating to listen to. So it's not always the sound quality, although for me, sometimes it is the sound quality. There are lots of ways that it can be bad. But there are also some really great ones. And that's the amazing thing, is that people who you know, would never get an audience and would never have an outlet because what they're writing about or what they're talking about is so esoteric, on a podcast, you know, you can do it. And some of them are fantastic. I mean, I don't think John Siracusa would ever be a radio host, right? And yet
he's really good at what he does.
He's great at podcasting. He's great he says that he's, you know, he doesn't like speaking off the cuff and he hates that he makes mistakes and he likes to be a control freak, but he's really good in that medium. And that's just, you know, he would never, we'd never have discovered that without this medium.
He is super listenable. And for a guy with that voice to be described as super listenable, it speaks to how interesting he is as a, I'm kind of poking at him a little bit there, but he's, that's a guy, he does such an amazing job, and he otherwise may have never even tried that.
Well, his personality shines through, and I think that's the, fundamentally the reason I love podcasting is that I think, I feel like people's personalities shine through in a way that, blogging and words on a page, whether it's a screen or a piece of paper, don't. And I, the kind of response I get to podcast stuff after having put words on a screen or on a piece of paper for 15, almost 20 years, I can tell you it is a whole like order of magnitude more response to podcasting. People, it's like a different part of your brain, I really believe. When you're when your brain is processing audio, different parts of your brain light up. And I think it has to do with community, feeling like it's a person that you're listening to. They're part of your world and they're part of your community. And I think that's the power of podcasting. And that's something that as many words as I've written over the years and as much nice feedback as I've gotten for stuff that I've written, it's not the same. It doesn't have the same kind of almost emotional and visceral connection to a person. And, you know, John wrote those OS X reviews for all those years and was famous for them, but he wasn't like a personality. He was just sort of the name on the label of those things. And now people like feel like they feel like they know him really well, even if they've never met him. I'm sure they come up to him at WWDC and say, John, you know, close personal friend, John Syracuse, all of that. That's because the podcasting, I really makes a connection like a movie or a TV show or something like that, that just reading words on a page does not do.
It feels like you're listening to a conversation between friends. And maybe that's colored by the fact that often when I'm listening to a podcast, that's exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah, me too.
and there are moments where like I'll be listening to the talk show and I'll go to interject as if like I'm just on a Skype call and I have to like flip that switch in my head going, no, this is already recorded.
Yeah, I was listening to the talk show the other week and it was John and Mike Montero, and I know both those guys. And then they mentioned me, and I was like, "Gah!" It's like the craziest thing of all is the way my radio is talking to me now.
Yeah, I think on this week's show, there was a thing. This week's talk show with Dan Frommer as the guest, something got mentioned about Vesper, and there's a thing like. John is my coworker. We make that thing together. But for him to mention on the it's a separate context, and there's still a thing in my head that goes off that like there's a flag that goes up.
Yeah.
Dial in on this because somebody on this show you're listening to, because it's still a separate entity. Mm-hmm. It's media. It's there's a celebrity that gets attached to that. It doesn't matter if I know the people or not. If I hear it on their show, then it feels like it's a different world. It's like seeing it on TV.
Yeah, it's that. Like I was saying, I think it's literally the way our brain processes things. You know, there's a lot of conversation about like how many people can really be in your not your like internet social network, your actual like human being social network. Like we're programmed
one.
Based on like tribes. Well, you know, you dream, dare to dream of two, three. But we've got like the small tribes of people that just sort of the way we evolved and the way that our social skills have evolved. And I think podcasting and TV and movies and fame actually comes from people filling those slots who you don't actually know, but your brain doesn't have like a different kind of slot for a person you watch on TV. It's got like people you know who are in your community and people you don't. And I came to this conclusion because I was at Comic-Con a few years ago and I was in a hotel lobby and a blonde woman walked by and I went, oh, I know her. And then I thought about it. And I was like, how do I know somebody who's at Comic-Con? And then I realized it was Juliet from Lost. And I don't know her, but my brain was like, that's a friend of yours and it's my TV friend. But that was, you know, I really believe that all of these kind of non-written media kind of do that. They do something. They scratch an itch that just reading words on a screen doesn't.
Well, there's a similar thing that happens like when you're at a WWDC or any conference, really. I go into this like pattern matching state where everybody I see looks like somebody I know because my brain is in the mode of, well, that guy looks like so-and-so, probably is so-and-so.
Right.
Like I just keep everywhere I look, it's more people that I recognize, more people that I know. And then there's like the last day of a conference when people start leaving, if you stick around for a day or two, for me at least, my brain still does that.
Sure.
I'll see people on the street like, that guy looks just like Mike Montero or that guy looks just like Jason Snell. whatever.
And it's probably not, but you know, you're in that mode. Do you ever try to match people to Twitter avatars? Because I do that at conferences and things. I'm like, I think I know who that is because they sort of look like their Twitter avatar, which is, you know, not great. Well, you know, this happened with you and me.
Oh, really? Oh, that's right. Where at Singleton.
At Singleton, I knew there was this guy I talked to at conferences. And then there was also this guy, Dave Wiskus, who did Unprofessional and was on the Twitter and on the internet and things. And I had those people both filed as people in my little Rolodex in my head. And then at Singleton, the guy from the conferences walked up to me and said with Dave Wiskus from the internet's voice, "Hi, I'm Dave Wiskus." And I had that moment of like, whoa, 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 wait a second. Dave Wiskus?
Let's dial back on the story a little bit, because what happened is I came up and I was chatting with a group of the Macworld folk at Singleton.
Right.
And you were there, and I said something to you, and you were pleasant, like you weren't rude to me, but it was a different level of recognition than what I would have expected. And so I came away and I'm thinking to myself, like, God, he was kind of a dick to me. Yeah. What happened?
We know each other. Why would he just give me the generic hello?
And then I think it was like Lex grabbed me or something after that, and there was the, oh, I realized who you are.
I think I had a moment where I said to Lex, wait, is that Dave Wiskus? And he's like, that's Dave Wiskus. I'm like, really? Yes, really?
And in real life.
That's the only time that's ever happened to me where I've like literally had the same person in these totally different slots of internet and real life. And I've actually known I've known them enough to file them in both those things and just never connected the two. Just never did. That was bizarre. It was a weird moment.
It was fun for me to go from wondering, did I do something to piss him off, to immediately getting an answer to that question.
Yeah, that's right. No. I don't think I was mean to you, right? It was just that you expected a level of recognition that I didn't provide, right?
When I say recognition, I don't mean like, don't you know who I am? But it was more like a, really, you don't? Like, not right. Because I'm famous or something.
Well,
we're
in a room with like several hundred people I don't know, right? So
we've been on podcasts together.
Exactly.
You're another
exactly,
guy.
Exactly, right. We had done episode 8. Again, please refer to your manuals on page 8 of the Unprofessional Source material. Yeah.
So, Jason, Jamie, you guys have never spoken before.
Correct.
Never.
Not until this episode. Here.
I've heard your voice many times.
And I have heard yours, and I've seen your name and your Twitter avatar and all of these things. And see, this is one of those things, too, where the avatar expectation, most of the time people are very disappointed because I'm not wearing that hat.
Oh, I thought you meant people are disappointed not in your avatar, but in that we all put up these pretty pictures of ourselves.
Oh,
and then we see each
reality.
Other in real life, and it's like, oh.
Oh.
Like a bad, a misleading OkCupid profile or
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
You don't go
yeah.
around with a fuzzy hat that's going down.
I don't unless it's actually cold, right. You know, but yeah, but I do work in that hat when it's cold outside. So it was a legitimate photo with a legitimate wearing of the hat. It just happened to be the only photo. We talked about this, I think, on our last episode about the photo. It's the only photo that I have of me. So that's what it was. That's what it ended up being. Yep. So yeah, a lot of disappointment around that when I meet people. Where's the hat, they say.
I don't walk around with red pillows and bedroom eyes all the time.
Don't you, Dave?
Well, I don't walk around with red pillows.
Okay, there you go.
Yes. I just had a fantastic image of the really fancy shirt that you might wear in the future with pillow collars. You're going to make that.
I'm going to start it. It's going to be a thing.
You know, Dan Morin has his Twitter avatar he's had for many, many years where he's got the little plastic Green Lantern ring and his Boston Red Sox hat. And it's funny because he's had it for so long now that I look at it and I think, oh, it's young Dan Morin. He doesn't look
like Guy English's Twitter avatar.
Yeah, if you wait long enough, it becomes sort of like a historical document. Guy English's Twitter avatar is disturbing because there's that hand on his neck with the French nail manicured hand on his neck. I never noticed it for the longest time, and now I can't not see that there's somebody back there.
That's exactly what you've just done to me now.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was there.
Oh yeah.
And now that picture
it'll be with you forever
maybe.
Now.
Yep. What's crazy, there's a really great picture of Guy that I think John took a couple years ago that I wound up using in my slides at Ool when I was talking about Guy for a second. I just threw his picture up on the screen. I don't know why he doesn't use that as his avatar.
I don't know.
Maybe, I think sometimes you just like attach to that as a, a moment of like, that's how you see yourself, or maybe you think that the you've used it as your avatar for so long.
People freak out when you change your avatar, right? Because it's like a it's part of your online personality, like on Twitter, and then suddenly wait a second, you're not you anymore. Somebody I follow was like an illustration or something for a long time, and now suddenly they're a person, and it's really disturbing because I expected them to be a sketch for the rest of their lives, and now they are a photo of a human.
They came to life.
It's weird. I did that in the early days of Twitter. At one point, I went on vacation and I changed my Twitter avatar to a Hello Kitty for a week, just really to troll people. And people were really upset. They're like, "What? Why did you do it? Who are you? What did you do with Jason?" It's like, "I'm just Hello Kitty this week. That's all. What's your problem?"
That's it. It's okay. I'm a little concerned about it ever changing mine, just because it's recognizable and.
I feel the same way. I know I need to change mine. I feel like I need to change it. It's from like 2011, but I'm nervous to do it. And I don't know what I'm going to use in its place.
Yeah. Yeah, because it is a little part of your, you know, personality. It's a silly little thing. And yet people in that Rolodex in everybody's head that, you know, they've got this little symbol of you. It's like I can imagine that this is who this person is. And you change it and it's weird.
Yeah. What have we done?
Yep.
So WWDC is next week.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's happening.
Let's talk Apple rumors.
Lots of facial recognition is going to happen there, let me tell you.
Yeah, it's the social part of the... This is the week that I spend the whole year training for, socially.
I'm not going.
Officially you're not going.
I'm officially not going. So.
Oh, yep. Why?
Well,
I thought we were going to put stickers on things and leave tacos outside of people's rooms.
Yeah.
You're doing that,
actually,
Dave.
Yeah,
you're doing that alone.
On your own. Yeah. All alone. I'll be there in spirit. No, I just, I'm traveling the week after and I have kids and, you know, so it's just, I try not to travel too close back to back, if that makes sense, when, you know, as a single mom. So, yeah.
Well, that's no fun.
Yeah. So I'm home with kids and their summer starts exactly next week. So, yep.
That'll do it.
So, yep.
So you won't have to go through the trouble of
facial recognition.
Or not recognizing.
Nope.
It seems like so many of my problems in life come down to my ability to recognize or not recognize other people's faces. And I don't mean in like who's the guy who can't rec. There's a fuck.
Oh, the man who mistook his wife for a hat. That guy.
I have no idea.
That's a famous Oliver Sacks wrote this book, I think, called The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat, and it was about a guy who had brain damage, and it was specifically the catalog of facial recognition, the ability to recognize faces, and right. Like they would show pictures of people and he was supposed to identify them, and the famous example is they showed a picture of his wife's face and he said, "Is that a hat?" Because he like literally couldn't see face. He could see people's bodies and things, but the part where we process faces was gone, and he couldn't just couldn't do it. That's the extreme.
Yeah, there's somebody, and I know like Brad Pitt recently, I want to say joked that he might have a mild version of this because he has a hard time recognizing people, but it's that where your brain, you can look at a face, and the versions I've heard is you look at a face and you can see those are eyes, that's a nose, that's a mouth, but they don't click in your head the way that they would for you. There's not a recognition of the person there.
Right.
And sometimes it's not that, but I feel that way. I feel like I'll walk through a room of people that I've seen 100 times and I just couldn't tell you who any of them
are. See, I'm really good with the face recognition. I'm just terrible at remembering names. That's my problem.
Yeah.
And that's actually, Dave, why I didn't know who you were, is because I remembered your face and I remembered things about like meeting you and chatting with you at other kind of tech events. But
I had no idea.
I had not filed away Dave Wiskus along with that information because I'm terrible at remembering names.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I was extremely offended for like 12 seconds.
You should never invite me on your podcast again.
That part of the social interaction. I mean, WWDC week is going to be a series of social interactions. There's not a lot of downtime that week.
Yeah, I always feel bad too, because there's like different kinds of interaction. There's the, like for me, WWDC week, I've got people I know pretty well who I don't see in person very often, and I want to spend time with them. And then there are the people I know in the industry pretty well, and it's once or twice a year I get a chance to see them, and I want to spend some time with them too. And then there's people I know in passing or I see on the internet, and I don't know them very well, but they're there and we run into each other, and those are nice conversations. And sometimes you end up being closer, and you follow them on Twitter and you chat with them more, and they become more close friends. And there are all these different groups, and trying to balance out the time. Like, you know, I could spend the whole week with the Macworld people who fly in for the event, because they're my people and I don't see them very often. But I got to balance that with, you know, all of these different groups. And the podcast stuff makes it, or media stuff in general, makes it even worse, because the people who are known by the large group now have kind of a large group who want to interact with them. And they've also got their like friends and stuff. And that's, you know, it's a challenge, because you want to, I mean, I would play WWDC back like 5 times if I could, because there's so many people I want to see and have conversations with, and there's just not enough time.
Yeah. Jamie, how do you manage that?
Well, in terms of meeting other people, or like, I don't really get a lot of people who actually want to meet me. So I don't know.
That's not true.
No, I mean, like, I don't know. When you give a talk or whatever, I don't know. I'm quiet and I hide in my room a lot. Well, so
It's not like we're saying that you stand around in San Francisco that week and people just come up and shake your hand. It's you go to all these events.
Sure.
You go to all these things and you're just going to like naturally meet people.
Sure. And you do. And, you know, and it's, you do. You have to distribute your time, because there are people that you want to hang out with that you know already. And yet it, like, part of the sort of awesomeness of going to events is meeting new people, and, you know, learning about new people and hearing their stories. And I think one of the hardest things I run into is trying not to work. Like, if that's not to sound stupid, but like, like, you know, people always want you to give them UX advice or, you know, review something for them. Like, do you ever get that?
Oh, yeah. That's part of why I started doing these design reviews.
Yeah.
So when people say, hey, I'm like, yeah, sure. Here's the link to the page for how to set that up with me.
I think that's a great idea. Yeah, because you end up doing like a couple hours of work sometimes, like right with one person, and that happens quite a bit actually. And then you're separate from like the group of activities and things happening.
I am still guilty of sometimes somebody will come up to me and just like stick an app in my face, and I'll look at it and I've just got like 100 thoughts pop into my head and I just start spouting them off.
Yeah, and you get into it. I mean, it's not hard to get into like looking at something with somebody and you know, just genuinely interested. But yeah.
Oh, you want my thoughtless opinions about your hard work? Absolutely. Let me dish those out.
Anyway, so yeah, how do I handle it, I guess, was the question that you asked. I don't know. I just go with the flow. I don't really have a plan. You just kind of figure it out as you go, I guess.
Do you guys ever hit just peak social where...
Absolutely. Like where I have to go in my room and hide.
Well, I feel beyond that. By Wednesday or Thursday, I just want to go home.
Yeah. That happens to be the first day usually, and I got to power through it. And then I find a happy medium, and then it's totally, and some of that is just stimulus, I think, because when I go to Comic-Con and I go to things and I write articles and all of that, but after a couple of days of that, I just can't even bear to see, you know, a crowd or to even see a lot of people, because it's just too many people and it's too much stimulus. That totally happens. And the more, for me, it's more crowds than it is, you know, if all WWDC was kind of rooms with 5 to 10 people sitting around a table chatting, I could probably do that for a long time. But
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Like, it is hard when it's crowds. I feel like, yeah, yes. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
You got to navigate them, right? It's like, it's so wary, because, you know, yeah, you got to navigate them, and you got somebody talking to you, and you're starting to think, well, I want to give this person some time, but, you know, I've also feel like this conversation's run its course, and neither of us is saying, I'll talk to you later, and moving on to the next thing, and it's loud, and your voice starts to get shredded, and there's just so much of that's a lot harder to take than, you know, this is that, it's like your personality profile where they say, you know, what would you rather have, be at a party with a lot of people or have dinner with a few friends? It's a little like that. It's like I don't mind going to parties with a lot of people, but they are more wearying for sure.
Yeah. I hit a point where I just, it's like, you know, I love all of you and I would stand here and talk forever with all of you. The trouble is that I would do that. And I know that I would do that unless I force myself to go somewhere else. And that's why I end up staying until Saturday and hating myself for it. But I will say I've got tricks that I use during WWDC.
Like magic tricks, Dave?
Yeah.
Tell us your
magic
tricks.
They're called illusions.
You hang up a shirt with puffy collar.
Is there a rabbit involved?
The final countdown. No, I so during the day, I don't attend the conference itself because I'm not a developer, and I can watch the sessions later for all of the designy and relevant developer-y things that I need to learn. And I'd rather let people who do write code go to those sessions, because I'm probably going to be staying up late and drinking and being social and not wanting to wake up before noon anyway. But during the daytime, when all the smart people are in sessions, I like to sit at the Samovar Tea Lounge in Yerba Buena. Huh. I'll sit out in the sun and just chill, drinking my tea lemonade. Most days, that's where you'll find me.
Just in case you were wondering where you would find Dave Wiskus during the week.
So yeah, during the week, you spot a guy sitting there that you're like, is that? Yeah, come over and say hi.
Office hours for Dave Wiskus.
Yeah.
I think you should hang red pillows on a little thing behind you so you're extra identifiable.
Smart.
Yep.
I don't think the audience for the show is so large that I'll be mobbed or anything like that. But yeah, if you're listening to the show and you're going to be at WWDC and you see me at Samovar and you want to come over and say hi, please do.
Offer only valid for people with good face recognition in their
breath. And people with good breath.
Sure.
Because that's a thing.
I just throw that out there.
Wow. I mean, I'm not saying that I don't want to like make assumptions one way or the other. I just want to say, so pro tips for people who are going to WWDC, hygiene.
Mm.
Hygiene and hydration.
Yep.
Those are the two most important things.
What kinds of stuff do you guys plan on doing out there? I mean, anything specific while you're out there, like specific parties or specific, or do you keep that under wraps and just fly by the seat of your pants?
Well, for me, this is a conference where I live and work, which is the worst because I have to like get in my car and drive home at the end of the night. So that limits.
They don't give you a room.
No.
That sucks.
No, and honestly, that would make it worse, right? Because then I would, because I don't love, I like traveling. I don't love being traveling on my own. I've been married for almost 20 years. I got two kids. I would rather sleep in my own bed at the end of the day. But the downside of that is that, yes, I have to drive home every night. And it's a different thing. You know, going to Mel's Diner at 2 a.m. when you just have to go back to the hotel is different than if you have to drive half an hour back to your house and then get up the next morning and come back in. So that part is hard for me. So I end up staying up. You know, I stay up late-ish, but by WWDC standards, not. Like, I, you
like
know,
8:30, 8:39.
Well, no, it's not like Lex Friedman bedtimes. That's crazy talk. But no, I mean, I'll get home at 11 or 11:30, and that which is very late to get home after work, essentially. But it's not very late for WWDC, where people are out until 2, 3, and 6 in the morning. So that's for me. That's the challenge: is how do you pack that time in and not, you know, while still having to balance being at home. And I'm going to miss a couple of my kids' things because I have to be there that week. There's stuff. There's parties and other stuff that I need to go to.
Sorry I had to miss your Little
League
game.
Like my son,
I had a party.
My son has this, like, wax museum thing where he gives, like, a 30-second. And my daughter, I missed my daughters. They always have it during WWDC week, and I've never seen this thing where they give a little speech, and they stand in front of a diorama that they did. And I work with him on the speech, and I work with him on the diorama, and that's all great, but I can't go because it's happening simultaneous with the Macworld party. Because it's like, you know, that day at 5 o'clock or something, it's like, well, you could come home early. And it's like WWDC week. I can't come home early because I'll either be at a party or I'll be writing or something. Yeah.
We need to have a talk with these schools. That's what we need to do.
Seriously. No events during WWDC. Well,
seriously,
we need to have a talk with Apple about scheduling their developer conference at the end of the school year for everybody who's a parent. But
I know. Seriously. Like, give it a go to the end of June. I think we'd be fine.
Yeah, it used to be later. Now it's
not.
Yeah,
it keeps creeping up, it seems. Wasn't the second week of June last year? Or did I missed it last year too.
This is slightly early.
It is slightly early.
It feels early, yeah.
Not that bad. Normally, WWDC, my birthday happens during WWDC, and this time my birthday is right after I get back.
When's your birthday?
June 8th. Yeah. I'm getting old.
Yeah,
you know, I listened to your old, since we mentioned his name a couple of times, your old buddy Lex has his uh has his daily podcast, which is like one man's descent into madness a little bit, where it's like, I will do a podcast every day until I go insane. And he's done like 100 of them.
That guy, I'm worried about
him. Yeah, I know that. But he did a whole episode, you know, he talks for 5 minutes. It's not like it's a big production, but he did a whole episode about how he's feeling old and how
is he 30 now?
He has aches and pains. He's like 32 or something. I get to the end, I'm listening and I'm like, yeah, man, tell me about it. Boy, it is bad getting old and all that. And then he comes to the end and he mentions how old he is. And I'm like, screw you, Friedman. Because he's like, he's like 10 years younger than me. Jerk.
Yeah. It's like, give it 6 years.
You have
Lex.
No
Come
idea.
On now.
Wait until you're in your 40s. Then you start feeling it. And then meanwhile, there's somebody out there who's in their 60s who's just laughing and laughing.
I know, right? Like, you people. Guys, babies. Yeah.
There's always an older fish.
Yeah, but 30, you know, Lex is not old. So he needs to shut up.
Yeah, old. It is crazy how your body changes over the years. Like how your body responds to life over years is quite amazing. And yeah.
When
and
you're young, you sort of feel like, I mean, people always say, oh, you feel like you're immortal. You do feel like your body is a self-replenishing system. Like everything, you know, well, it'll be, you know, it's bad now, but in a couple of days, it'll be fine. And then when you're in your 40s, I can say from personal experience, you start realizing, oh, no, it doesn't self-replenish. It wears down. And then at the end of that, it's out of tread and you die. And you can sort of feel it like that's not going to get better. Right. That's there's a Louis C.K. routine about that. Which is he hurt his ankle and he goes to the doctor and the doctor's like, well, you could stretch. Will it help? Not really. Well, how does it get better? Well, it's not going to get better ever. Well,
it's
what if I was an athlete? You're not. Right. And it's like there's some truth to that. It's like I've got some aches and pains in my body that I'm probably always going to have now. And that's just how it is. Sad. Oh. Yeah.
Well, is this why people do drugs?
Maybe. One, well, there are many reasons. This might be one. It's possible. Okay. I don't know.
I had last week, I was out last Wednesday with friends, local iOS people, and we were out pretty late. It was a night of drinking. The next day, I felt a little hungover. I just didn't sleep very well. And by the end of the day, I was violently ill. Like it got worse. It was like, I started a little hungover and by the end of the day, I was just way worse. And I don't know now if it was just a slow onset, awful hangover or if I got food poisoning in there somewhere. But my weekend, my entire Memorial Day weekend, up through Sunday at least, was just me in bed with just feeling terrible. And that was a moment where I thought either I'm dying or I'm getting old, which is still kind of the same thing.
Probably a combination of both.
I'm definitely dying. I just don't know how fast at this
point. Exactly.
But I spent Monday, I walked up to Central Park with my friend and our former guest, Philip Bowden. We walked over to Central Park and we wound up accidentally wandering into the Central Park Zoo. And we just said, screw it, bought zoo tickets and some Dippin' Dots and looked at some animals for a while.
Dippin' Dots.
That was a moment where I felt like if I can wander into a park eating freeze-dried ice cream on a bright sunny
you're
day.
You're still young. Or at least young at heart. I'm so glad that story went the way that it did because when I got the sequence wrong there and I had you already in the zoo when you said screw it and I thought and then we jumped into the panda cage or something like that. I was like, oh no, Dave, what did you do at the zoo? You just went to the zoo. Just on a spur of the moment.
With Dippin' Dots.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, Memorial Day, Central Park. We walk down this path and it turns out to be the path that goes to the Central Park Zoo. And we get there and we realize we're there and we just said, we don't want to turn around. Let's look at some red pandas.
I love it. See, those are the things that keep you young right there. Dippin' Dots. I don't know. I like that. Oh, guess what? I have a keep you young story, very brief story this morning on my almost daily walk. We ran through the sprinklers. Some sprinklers were on. We decided to run through them this morning. So that was fun.
That's how life should work.
It really, spontaneous and fun. Can't wait to do it again.
I want to go skydiving.
Have you been?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Once.
I've been once but three jumps in the one. Have you been, Jason?
No.
Would
not
you
interested.
Go?
No.
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 No, that's never been. Yeah. I don't even know how to respond to that.
Nobody's iffy on the subject of skydiving.
No. It's true.
Nobody's like, maybe. No. Everybody is either I want to or never.
I just don't feel the need for that. That whatever thrill might come of that, I just I don't need it. And the amount of nervousness and hesitation, and I mean, this is always the question, is like, if I was on the Amazing Race and they made me jump out of an airplane or do bungee jump or something, would I do it? Sure, I'd do it. Do I feel a desire to do it? No, I just I don't think I'd get much out of it, and I I would. There are other things I'd probably rather do than jump out of an airplane. I don't know.
It's good. I enjoyed it when I did it. I did it 3 times, and then that was it. I've never been again since. I think I was 19 years old when I went.
And when I say I want to skydive, I don't necessarily mean literally skydive. Stuff like that. I want to do crazy stuff. I want to do the things that, I don't know. I have moments where I'm sitting at home by myself and I'm thinking, what am I doing? I need it.
No, I get that.
I'm at least one awesome story short of where I want to be right now.
I get that. I mean, I want to go places. I want to travel to interesting places. I don't need to jump. I don't need to go to Australia and jump out of an airplane while I'm there. But going to Australia, I want to do, and things like that, and having experiences like that, absolutely. But for me, a lot of it has to do with travel, to just seeing interesting places on the planet.
That's what I enjoy. I have to say, even I don't know. A couple of weeks ago, my kids went to their dad, so my boyfriend and I, we just went to Zion National Park, and he had never been. He's from the East Coast, and it was just a really cool experience. I hadn't been there in probably 10 years, and but stuff like that, like, I enjoy so much. I mean, I used to do a lot of adventure sorts of, like, thrill seeker sorts of things, like skydiving and crazy mountain biking and I don't know, stuff like that. But now I'm more in it for, like, let's go on a long drive. I don't know, maybe it's age, but I just enjoy that sort of experience where you're, well, I guess just an experience. I don't know.
That isn't that what life is?
A series of experiences. Sequence of experiences. Yeah, but I don't know. I do. I enjoyed, like, the traveling thing. I do like, I don't know, getting out, but I also like staying in. I'm a big fan of staying in.
You are multifaceted.
This is the give and
not
take.
Not only going out,
but also staying. This is the give and take that my wife and I have, where when we go on vacations, that, you know, she I think if she had her way, we were just in Hawaii a few weeks ago, and if she had her way, I think she would have had us doing, you know, packed schedule, like every day we're going to go through the rainforest and we're going to go on a hike over here. Yeah. We're going to go snorkeling over here and all of that. And I like doing that stuff, but I also like we're going to sit on the beach and I'm going to read a book for 4 hours and
yes,
dip in the water and all that. Cause for me, that's, you know, that's also a thing I need on my vacation, is to, you know, read a novel on the beach and get some downtime. And it's got to be a balance.
I like it when those things happen spontaneously. I don't like a planned trip at all. When I was in Ireland for UL, the last day after the conference, before I headed back up to Dublin to fly out, along the way, I stopped with a friend at this place called Devil's Glen. It was just sort of woke up, and it was, what do you want to do today? And I said, I want to see a castle, a sheep, and a waterfall.
You come to the right place.
Off the top of my head.
Ireland, you got it. Doable.
Right. And so we go and we see a castle and we see a sheep. And then we go to a place called Devil's Glen, I don't know, an hour or so south of Dublin. And it was rainy, which, you know, Ireland. And there's nobody else there. It was kind of a park. I don't even know how to describe it. I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like it in the U.S. But you park and there's a trail that you walk along. And it just gets more and more. It reminds me of something out of Myst or an Indiana Jones movie or Romancing the Stone. Like, you got the rain coming down and there's a river running next to you, but you're sort of up on this, like, I would say cliff, but it's not a cliff because there's trees all the way down. You can hear the river more than you can see the river. And it was round trip, a 6-mile hike to see this waterfall.
Nice.
And I would never do something like this. Like, I would never sit down and say, well, I'm going to Ireland, I better take a 6-mile hike to see a waterfall.
Right,
that
like a scheduled thing.
That way.
Yeah,
I think. But as a spur of the moment deal, perfect, exactly what I would want to do, and it wound up being one of the most amazing experiences of my life because it really was like walking through mist. They had these weird blocks carved out of the stone that had strange messages in them that didn't make any sense or mean anything as along the walk up. Like, one of them said, "We have lost the dog," and there's another that carved into the wall of the I'll say mountain. Was a sign that said, too tired to continue, I think I'll sleep here tonight.
Nice.
Just weird, bizarre things.
Were there puzzles you had to solve along the way?
It felt like there should be.
I mean, walking through mist, like, right?
Survivor.
And we get up to the waterfall, and the rock right in front of the waterfall carved into it says, when we find the ring, I'll propose.
Nice.
I tried Googling it on the internet to see if anybody knew what this was all about. It was just other people talking about how weird it was. There's no explanation to be found.
Wow. That's cool.
I think that's pretty fascinating. Yeah, it's a good experience.
But I could never I don't feel like I could have ever planned that. That had to be a wake up one day and just go do it experience.
Oh, I think that's kind of how it should be. I don't, not that I object to people. There are some people who really, really do like the scheduled thing. And I appreciate that. But yeah, I tend to, if I've got stuff scheduled, then I just feel disgruntled about it. And like, I don't want to participate. So yeah, that happens to me.
Schedule fatigue?
Yeah. I don't want to do it if it's scheduled. I'm like, no. Anyway, yeah, it's a little bit.
You're just a rebel. That's your problem.
Well, sounds like you might be too, Dave.
Yeah.
And Jason, you want some downtime.
Sure.
I really appreciate it. And the older I get, like, the more I appreciate some downtime. I just, like, I enjoy just being sometimes.
I want to do stuff. I just don't want to have to do stuff.
Well, yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah. You know?
That should be the title of my autobiography that I'll never write.
The Dave Wiskus story. That would be the subtitle.
The Dave Wiskus story.
I'd get lazy. The entire title would just be The Dave Wiskus Story. Dave Wiskus presents The Dave Wiskus Story by Dave Wiskus.
Well, the introduction says, I only want to do things I want to do and not, and I didn't want to write this book. And then it's just blank pages.
Blank pages.
it's
actually
a
journal.
Notes.
It's a journal that comes with a picture of me on it.
Yeah. This is field notes or something. Exactly. The Dave Wiskus autobiography is actually just a foreword on the inside front cover of a field notes book.
or it's a 1-inch ream of 3-hole punched paper in a trapper keeper with my photo.
Oh man, that's perfect.
I love it. Trapper keepers are so rad. Remember those?
Jamie, what I love about you is that I knew that's where you would go with that.
It's memorabilia, Dave. I love.
Did you have the Lisa Frank Trapper Keeper?
Oh my gosh. I swear I had a Trapper Keeper with a unicorn or a Pegasus on it. I'm really, really pretty certain of that.
I think I have the classic sailboat.
Ooh, the sailboat.
Yeah.
Was it an airbrush styled sailboat or was it just like a picture of a sailboat?
Yeah, I think it was a picture of a sailboat.
I want to say, I think my brother might have had that one.
it was like literally. You just take whatever Trapper Keeper you could get because they were hard to come by.
They were very popular. Yep.
I remember the poor kids had peachy folders.
They had what?
Peachy folders preceded. No, so it turns out that the peachy folders are, this is all regional, like different parts of the country like didn't have peachy folders. But in the West Coast, I think peachy folders were very, very popular. And yeah, my memory is that the peachy folders were just the older generation. That was the before there were Trapper Keepers, there were peachy folders. Which are, you know, little organizers. They were like, you know, heavy stock organizers where you could tuck papers on the inside, but they weren't super awesome like a Trapper Keeper.
And the artsy people or the really smart kids all had the Mead composition books.
Oh yeah, I know.
With that black and white pattern on the front.
Oh my gosh. So I Googled the Trapper Keepers. I found the one that was mine. It's the clouds with the rainbows and the hearts. That's the one I had. I was thinking there was a unicorn there, but I probably just had folders that went inside. This was my Trapper Keeper. Oh my gosh.
Somewhere out there, somebody's listening to the show going, oh my God, I had that same Trapper Keeper.
I guess that's the Lisa Frank. Wow. See, I didn't even know.
I was right.
Wow. You knew me better than I knew myself.
Or at least your taste in Trapper Keepers.
Yep. As a third grader, 9-year-old Jamie's taste. And I would pick the same one today. Yep. I would. That one or the palm trees.
Oh, that was a good one. Yeah, a lot of the boys had the red sports car, and I never was into cars like that. So they'd be like, oh, I got this cool red sports car. I'm like, whatever. I got a sailboat.
Sailboat's great. So see, my brother used to slice the plastic and put his own drawings inside, like of Eddie Iron Maiden.
That's smart.
Yeah.
It's like Trapper Keepers were the precursor to iPhone wallpaper.
Yes, your customization options.
It's kind of the same thing. I mean, some people will put like a picture of their kids or something as their wallpaper, but a lot of people just go with one of the options given to them. I do. I use the stock Nebula wallpaper.
I just use the black. I mean, I have, there's the difference like the behind the icons screen, but then there's like the when you turn it on screen. Like when you just click the button.
Yeah.
Wow, I sound really technical right now, don't I? I have my very own where, you know, when you slide to unlock screen. I have my very own screen there.
Yeah.
This is so not a technical thing that this even counts as not talking about technology.
Sorry, I'm going to fire Lex for that. He's not even on the show anymore. He's fired. That's it. No, I've got pictures of my kids on the lock screen, and I try to, it's a picture that I've taken, but I try to have it be like a landscape or something. I've got like a picture of flowers I took in the Boston Public Garden on my iPad lock screen. So it's not generic. I do personalize that. Just like slicing open the plastic in the Trapper Keeper.
That's it. That's what we've done here. We've sliced open the plastic on our Trapper Keepers, put our own picture in. So much easier to do these days.
Yeah.
And in the future, when they sing songs of our generation, our grandchildren's grandchildren, that's what they're going to say of us.
You know, there's the greatest generation and the lost generation. We are the Trapper Keeper generation.
I got to look at this. I remember peachy folders, and I have a vague, there's like a football guy or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, there's like a girl playing tennis and a football thing and track guys, and then you would deface them. You would draw all over them. This link actually has people, some of it's drawn in.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
or you'd write like word balloons, these. And you'd be like, the guy would, my leg is broken, and all of that on the, yeah, peachy.
Because they were just so cheap. Looking because they didn't it was like have clip, officially licensed
yeah
characters.
It was like clip art from the 50s put on these things and then they just made them and this was the there's a story somewhere somebody did like the ultimate story of the Trapper Keeper and this is an example of like the same stuff just generation after generation like this and then at some point somebody had this idea to do the Trapper Keeper and it blew this peachy folder out of the water.
Trapper Keeper.
See, that's how you disrupt an industry.